Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Kachmar, and this is Lifeguarding Off Duty
with Dr. Michael Kachmar.
Today is November 16th, the year of our Lord, 2021. I'm Dr. Michael Kachmar, and we have our off-duty lifeguards. We have Sean. Say hello. Hello, Sean. Anything you want to add right now? Like, just, you know, tell them how great you are. You worked as a lifeguard this morning. But you see, you're off duty, but you were working this morning
at the pool.
Every morning. He was bundled up. I can't get him to wear a hat during the summer, but he wears a hat and a hoodie and everything else. And we have Tyler.
What's up, guys?
Tyler, welcome. And so we have a great show today. We're going to talk about what we want to talk about today is what we started last show was that the history of lifeguarding, basically how it started. You know, how did people start swimming? Really, not lifeguarding, but swimming. Why did people start swimming, and you know, how that all came about? But before we start that, I just want to throw out a couple of things. Sean, can you give people the way to get a contact with us? And you know, big thing is, I want to. We have a email address, which is drkachmar@icloud.com. It's going to go up on the screen right now, and I want to spell it out. It's drkachmar. That's K-A-C-H-M-A-R at iCloud.com. What other places they could get a hold of us?
They can follow us on Instagram at lg.association, lg.association.
Right, and this is a lifeguard news station, so there's going to be three ways you guys could get involved with us. You could come to the studio as an invite, and you could be live. You could also, if you send us an email address, we'll send you a link, and you could come on through your email, and the link takes over your phone or your computer, and we could see you and we could hear you, and you go live, or you could call in, and we have a phone number that we could give you if you send us an email. So I would definitely recommend that. We are right now live on YouTube and live on Lifeguarding. Did you change the, by the way, I hate to interrupt.
I did.
You did? So yeah. You're not scrubbing up. So, yeah. All right. So yeah, we have another channel. It's called Scrubbing Up with Dr. Michael Kachmar, and but we do have YouTube channel right now. And then we'll also put out some short clips of highlights of today's show. So, and our goal is to have as many guests as we can, make it very informative and communicate between lifeguards. We got a lot of stories out there, and far as we know, this is one of the only platforms, and we hope to do it once a week, and hopefully we continue on. So you guys, Tyler, you want to start the show with the,
what do you got, Tyler?
So Tyler, we are in the dark right now. So Tyler's got, he did the research.
We did a lot of research this week.
Yeah, so we'll see. And this is, so tell us what the research is about and then what you came up with. So,
well, I mean, I started at like swimming, trying to figure out when people started swimming and whatnot. But obviously.
Would a caveman swimming? Would a lake?
I didn't go far.
Chasing crocodiles.
Actually.
But You got fossils of the first guy, like you know, like when he pitched. You see the people they get, like the dinosaurs, or like the people in Pompeii where they were like when
frozen,
frozen. You got like a guy frozen swimming in a tar pit.
They found a fossil. I obviously quickly fell into like the history of like life saving and
right
that type of stuff in general. A lot of it was originally like lighthouses and. You know, people like protecting harbors and going out for shipwrecks.
Right, shipwrecks. That's what was in New Jersey. What I know was the lifeguard, life saving association, or lifeguard saving, and they had these ships. They would have stations all along, I know, Jersey coast, and they would send the boats out and save the ships.
In Jersey, it was interesting. Jersey is like a jumping point for a lot of like lifeguarding and life saving in the U.S. in general. They got started really early originally because New Jersey, the fact that it's positioned between New York and Philadelphia, so it's got those
it's a hot
two
spot.
Yeah, a lot yeah, of boat traffic, a lot of boat traffic.
Very main ports, and from the 1600s, like, and then when they started kind of recording the data, there's been thousands of shipwrecks out, like right off the Jersey coast. So. They really started with lighthouses and light boats was really the
start origin. Of it.
Isn't there like a famous Nazi boat off of IVSP or something?
There was.
Kachmar, do you know that about that? Did you look into that?
Well, you want me?
That wasn't part of what I.
No. Well, real quick, during World War II, first of all, during World War I, the Germans came over here and put a lot of mines. and a lot of ships, mine would be like floating bomb, and a lot of ships crashed into it. It didn't have radar back then, and they were sunk. So a lot of the war was here, right off our coast. World War II, I know of one for sure, ship that was torpedoed right in front of Bardigan Inlet, which is basically New Jersey, and it was called the Gulf Trade. And that got torpedoed.
That was the name of the boat?
The Gulf Trade. I actually fished over. It's a wreck that you could go there and fish over it. They have the coordinates. So it was called the Gulf Trade. And there's people who have written books and they were there fishing when it got hit. They actually saw the boat get hit. That's why during World War II, you had to shut all your lights off. If you lived on the coast, you had to shut your lights off, because if you had lights on land and there was a ship that was between you and the submarine, which is further out, the background of the light would illuminate the ship, and so the subs could hit it. That's why they made everybody shut their lights off. You understand what I'm saying?
That's wild.
So yeah, because they were hitting them. So keep on going. So you had so that started it here.
The earliest.
So is that a necessity, basically?
Oh yeah. The earliest. So this is.
So they were saving people. The people that they considered. They were saving people from sinking ships.
Yeah, we weren't doing lifeguarding.
Right.
So right now I'm on the U.S. Life Saving Service Heritage Association page. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they have this cool little timeline about like the chronology. It's called the Chronology of Early Life Saving.
Want to pull it up?
It's at the bottom of that page you have pulled up. But
so this is storm fighters?
So it says here in 1708, the earliest Chinese life-saving services were documented.
Chinese.
So all the way down.
In China, you're talking about.
So, in terms of, like, this is the first kind of documented procedure for life-saving.
In China? Yeah.
In the world.
Oh, in the world. Okay.
Well, China had those big boats.
So 1950.
Yeah, the Chinese were sailing around the world before everybody.
Right. But it's called the United States Life Saving Service.
So
that's what morphed into the Coast Guard.
That's part of what I'm going to get into.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
So that was in 1708. We see this Chinese kind of organization around just kind of documenting stuff for rescues and how to go about that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then in 1774, we see the founding of the British Humane Society, which later became the British Royal Humane Society. And that's kind of where, like, the origins for life-saving in this country come from. We saw the Massachusetts Humane Society.
Right, let me just, Sean, everybody can see this.
I was just making sure.
Yeah, so on the right page. So for our podcast people, you know, if you do listen to this afterwards, go back to our YouTube video and you can see what we're putting up here. We have a lot of the data here. Just to give you an information so you can look at it. So go ahead. I'm sorry, Tyler.
Made me lose my place here.
Ah, that's right.
So the Massachusetts Humane Society is one of the forerunners to the U.S. Life Saving Association, which then turned into the Coast Guard. There are actually two organizations, though, that turned into that. One was... Alexander Hamilton founded it. It was called the Marine Association or something like that. Oh, sorry. The Revenue Marine Service, right? That was founded by Alexander Hamilton.
Well, he started the bank, so that makes sense. You know, Hamilton was a big bank guy.
So that was in 1790. You guys know your history.
So it's probably to collect revenue, tariffs, and money.
That's
and stuff
exactly
like
what
that.
It was for. Yeah, they commissioned.
I don't think he was too worried about people. You know, I'm gonna say that. No, I shouldn't say he's worried about drowning, but he was worried about the cash.
They commissioned 10 boats to kind of do that, to like collect tariffs and
you know,
stuff
I didn't
like
know that. I knew they started the. I knew they had the Lifeguard Association, you know, to save ships that were going down and get the cargo, you know, and they'd shoot the thing out and get people, you know, from the mast and bring them in. But I didn't think about that. So that's interesting. So Hamilton, who started the National Bank, he basically had to have a bunch of ships to go get revenue and contraband and stuff like that. It's pretty interesting. I learned something. That was Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton is an amazing individual, man. You know, the Hamilton Papers. You know, we should talk. That's not for this show.
Great
but,
Broadway play too.
Yeah, but the man himself, and he, you know how he died. You know how Hamilton died
by was it in like a duel.
Yeah, duel with the vice president, Aaron Burr, shot him, And but Hamilton,
that's
if,
pretty cool.
If you really want to read something really interesting, is the Hamilton papers, and they're amazing because they're you know basically these little little letters, and he would to critique what was going on as the Constitution, the Bill of Rights were being developed. But anyway, go ahead.
But I mean, not only was he a forefather of this country, he was a forefather of lifeguarding. Basically, a lot of my research this week's focused around the U.S. Life Saving Service, which it wasn't founded in 1948, but that's when they kind of got their start. This is when Congress appropriated $10,000 for, quote, providing surf boats, rockets, carronades, and other necessary apparatus for better preservation of life and property from shipwrecks on the coast of New Jersey, lying between Sandy Hook and Little Lake Harbor.
Oh, wow. So we're right in the midst. So New Jersey's right in the midst of it.
Yeah.
So what we talked about last time, just to try to, you know, tie things in, a lot of the California lifeguarding generated from a different way, from Hawaii. Hawaii started it from, because they were watermen. They were mm-hmm. in the water and they were making a living and they were, you know, but there was also dangerous, probably to people who were kind of similar, you know, people working in the water. And then they migrated to California. And then we read about that guy last week, Joe Pecoraro, who ran and just passed away at 91, the Chicago whole thing. Now, he came from California. So then at the same time, you got things developing in the East Coast in New Jersey. So, you know.
And it all comes out of like some type of necessity.
Yeah, seems like the East Coast was ahead because California started when the Intercontinental Railroad was completing.
So we were so New Jersey.
Like all of it.
Yeah, we were ahead of it.
In this country, kind of started.
Hey, you hear that? You hear that, Hawaii?
And in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Give us a call, Hawaii. We beat you on that now, but that's I.
So also another Jersey guy. It was a New Jersey congressman, William A. Newell, that lobbied for that funding, that original $10,000. Now, it was not until 1871 that the U.S. Life Saving Service was actually established as an official, like, arm of the government.
What year?
1871. Oh, 71. So I have a quote. So this is a quote from a book titled A Legacy, the United States Life Saving Service by Dr. Dennis L. Noble. I found that. There's a link to it on this Life Saving Service Heritage Association website that we have pulled up.
Good. Yeah. And again, people who are listening to us, go, you know, this is all going to be, if you listen to us on a podcast, you could go to our webpage. We basically send us an email, but you could archive us on YouTube and you could watch this and you could see what we're having here. So
yeah, we're trying to bring the visual aids today.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at our pictures.
So the USLSS, I believe is the correct acronym, started with a young lawyer from Maine named Summer Increase Kimball.
What?
And in this book,
Summer,
you think Summer Increase Kimball.
You think that, Sumner Avenue has anything to do with this, Cashmore?
No, but that was his middle name. Dream. Whoa. You got me going. Wait, what's his middle name? Yeah. Where does it say Increase. That? Increase. You're pulling my leg. I don't know. That's his name? Summer Increase Kimball?
Yes.
Sounds like he's compensating.
Yeah, so anyway, Noble says in his book, quote, Summer Increase Kimball, a young lawyer from Maine, was appointed in 1871 the chief of the Treasury's Department Revenue Marine Division. One of his first acts was to send Captain John Faust of the U.S. Revenue Marine on an inspection of the life-saving network. So between 1848 and 1871, there were very few of these life-saving stations set up along the coast, and it was bad. They were like severely understaffed. Dudes were making like $200 a year. They'd pay one guy $200 a year to kind of just keep the life-saving house. Mm. And the boats were just in dilapidated condition. Nothing was good. So they sent this guy out to do the survey, and he noted that, quote, rescue apparatus was rusty for want of care and some of it ruined. Some keepers were too old, few were competent.
Yeah, we'll pay him $200.
And politics had more influence in the selection of keepers than the qualifications for handling boats. In short, the report painted a dismal picture. So I apologize. I said in 1871 the association was formed. It was in 1878. Mm. The network of growing life-saving stations was finally organized as a separate agency of the Treasury Department and named the U.S. Life-Saving Service.
Right, which, and that went into the Coast Guard.
And this turned into the Coast Guard. Comparatively, right. This was 13 years before the Royal Life-Saving Service was founded in England. It was Kimball.
Maybe England, too.
It was our friend Summer Increase Kimball, who remained the superintendent of the service until 1915, when it was replaced by the U.S. Coast Guard, when that and the Revenue Marine Service, which was later titled the Revenue Cutter Service, merged into the Coast Guard. Now, some people will say that the Coast Guard was founded in 1790 with the Revenue Marine Service, but that was just one of the forerunners that led to it.
Good. Hey, Sean, when you put it back up, put the our email address up there for me, would you please? So people want to, if people are watching this, you guys could send us a comment right now on a comment.
Interesting comment here about the...
A comment if you want right now, if you're listening to us, but also send us an email. You know, we definitely have to hear if you like this content. Go ahead.
Interesting little fact here about Massachusetts Humane Society, which was, you know, influenced by the British Humane Society.
See, it's funny you're saying Humane Society, because I guess people were like drowning out there suffering. People were probably yelling and screaming.
It was largely volunteer. So
you know, they probably felt bad for these people. Because, I mean, why the Humane Society? You think about like dogs and cats, right?
Yeah.
You know,
really.
I mean,
no,
like why? Right. It's just funny
this
that you mentioned that.
It's a humane thing to do.
Yeah, but I guess that's where it came. You know, you would think that the government would have said, hey, that enough is enough. But I heard that stories where people would be sitting on the beach or in a restaurant, and one of these boats would go, you know, start to sink, and people would be screaming, bodies would float up, and, you know, so it was pretty wild.
Largely volunteer, too, and that was one of the main problems, because you'd have these keepers that are only making $200 every year, and something would go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, they'd see a boat going down in the waves, and they would be miles from any civilization. So they'd have to go find people to volunteer, run them back to the site of the shipwreck. And by then, the ship's probably completely busted up anyway.
And you got to remember, you know, when it goes into this life-saving association, which I'm more familiar with, I mean, there's actually the headquarters, the old headquarters in Seaside Park. That's where the beach used to come up to. Mm-hmm. And they had these things right on the beach, and they would have like these railroad tracks that go right into the ocean, and they would launch the boat. These boats were pretty big, and they'd have maybe 8, 9, 10 guys rowing them. I have a picture somewhere.
Giant boats.
Right, and a guy would like till it in the back, and they would row. But you got to remember, a lot of these storms were in the wintertime. So you have a northeast storm in February, January. The water's, you know, 35 degrees. None, you know, they have life preservers on. They're made out of cork, but they're going out there freezing cold.
And you got to think, the only time they're launching those boats is in nasty, nasty surf.
Right, right. Yeah. You got to talk about, you know, balls, man. I mean, I'm just like, holy stuff.
Those original guys in those
early years,
pre-life-saving service, a lot of them died drilling with those boats.
Oh, yeah.
Because they would go out and capsize them and drill with them, and that's how a lot of them died. A lot of the early guys were quoted as dying from either that or disease that they contracted on the job.
Yeah, well, what I remember about that, you know, when I was studying it, and I have a couple books on it, so they would have shacks or headquarters, and there would be one or two guys, you know, and they would call the other guys when it came, but they would walk, and they would have lanterns, and they'd walk up and down the beach looking for these ships, because, you know, remember, there's no radios, you know, I mean, if there was a ship out there, maybe they could have flares, right? And
that's the thing, there's just no form of communication.
Well, let me see, was the Titanic? When did the Titanic go down? Because they had ship to shore. They did have ship to shore radio. Now, I'm gonna tell you this. Another thing about history, you talk about they did get shipped to shore.
1912.
Okay, so by 1912, you had shipped to shore radio. And what that was is you would send out a signal from the ship. Now, you needed a receiving place. And you guys probably don't even know it, but if you go down in where we are right now, is a place called Ocean Gate, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And AT&T had a huge, huge facility there with all these telephone poles and wires. And that was the main communicator for the ships, and they actually had underground. They still had cables going from Ocean Gate across the ocean, so they had underground cables. That's how things, you know, really. I'm not making sense. That's our area, and the building is still there. But they had ship to shore. So But again, you would have to, you know, you'd have to have a sophisticated scenario. So I don't know when they started to get these things, but they still had to go up and down and get information from, you know, see the ship going down in the flares, and then, you know, call out everything. But I, you know, but that's another place that we had. So
these dudes were like the original badasses.
Oh yeah,
and they were doing this all in like full wool.
Oh yeah, you could see that.
So
here, let's show a picture here. Let me see. Let me put this up here. So I'm going to show you guys something here. Hang on. So here's a picture of these guys rowing.
And it's like this. It should fit like 12
this
people.
This is a
see,
book.
Guys? Yeah, yeah. I mean, you guys could see that.
This is a book I picked up. It's titled Guarding New Jersey Shore, Lighthouses and Lifesaving Stations by David. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing this wrong.
Right
VC.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
Images. And there's the... David versus
super informative. This is actually what I use as like my jumping point.
There's
last week.
I have a book about lifeguarding we should bring out, but let me just tell you, you know, from a couple historical things that I know is that there's like you said, thousands and thousands of shipwrecks out there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were wooden, they had the mask. But then World War I and World War II, you have a lot more shipwrecks too. They and I don't know who was saving those. You know, I'm very sure the Coast Guard was probably involved in that. And right now, just for people who don't know, the Coast Guard in peacetime is under the right now it's under Homeland Security. And if the war breaks out, it'll go under the Navy. So it's a branch of the Navy. But right now it's under Homeland Security. And so they did a lot of work back in those days, saving people's lives. And I don't know how many, you know, how many people they saved. Do you have anything on the Coast Guard? How many people, you know, how that evolved or no?
This all kind of just blends into the Coast Guard. They had the USL. What is it? USLSS.
Yeah.
The USLSS has the coolest saying. They go, the regulations say you have to go out. They don't say you have to come in.
Ooh, wow, yeah, that'd be asses.
That's pretty
good.
So next
question I have for you. Yeah. Okay, so now you have we see this what do you call it? Progression going from the saving to the Coast Guard, but where does the lifeguards branch off? So in other words, you had the U.S. You know, you had the Life Saving Association.
Funny you mentioned that.
So where? I know.
You keep getting ahead of my research.
Okay, well,
I'm asking the right questions.
Well, you didn't tell me any of those. So now
we're getting there.
So we went. It branched off to the Coast Guard. They're saving the big ships and you know things like that. But where?
Can I read you one more quote before?
Yeah, good.
Actually, a couple more quotes, but there's one that's.
About what dates are we at right now, though, just for timeline
sake? We are in, like, the 18...
Almost 1900?
Late 1800s.
Okay.
Like, 1870s is when... So, 1878 is when the USLSS was founded. So, in this book by Dr. Dennis Noble, A Legacy, the United States Life-Saving Service... pardon me. This is actually from the USLSS website.
Okay.
It explains how people thought of the members of this organization. And it says, quote, they were called storm fighters and they were called storm warriors. When wind and wave conspired to kill those who dared to tread upon the sea, the men of the United States Life-Saving Service left the comfort of their sturdy stations and entered the battle with nothing more than wooden boats, cork life jackets, and the oilskin foul weather gear on their backs. They let their muscle, determination, and bravery lead the way. Time and again, they smirked in the face of danger and stole back the lives of men who were supposed to be dead, victims intended to be claimed by shipwrecks caused by storms.
Yeah, and remember, you're talking probably, like you said, January and February, mm-hmm. when the water was in the 30s.
Yeah, there's not a force on Earth like the ocean.
And cold.
Oh yeah.
You know, we bitch, moan, and groan when we're going in. It's big ocean and it's warm. Like we get thrown around.
Cash, don't make me swim to that buoy.
No, I mean, listen. If anybody's listened to us, we've all swam in cold, cold water. And I tell you, I mean, I've swam in 50-degree water, and you ain't got much time. It sucks it out of you. I watched this one.
The second you hit the water, it's like your chest just.
They took these Olympic swimmers. They did this test. And I remember this one girl. They uh, they have them out like on a little platform, and they're only a few feet away from the beach, and they put them in water, and they can't even hardly make it in. They're crawling when they get there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so cold, and I think with like 35 degree water, you might have maybe 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and then you pass out. You go into hypothermia. You get so cold, and so think to these guys. I mean, forget about they're falling in the water, because I think if the boat capsizes, you're dead. I mean, maybe even if you float, you're so cold. How long do you? Yeah. How long, you know? I think you're done. I mean, maybe some of those guys were tough. I know a lot of them used to wear woolen sweaters. It keeps the water off you, and you know, you probably could survive.
Well, they had like the harpoon gun that would shoot to a shipwreck,
right.
and pulley them back. Right. On it was like right. a. It right. looked like a boat that yeah, like would a just James hang Bond off.
Gadget. It was a caffeine. Yeah. It was a
literally a James Bond gadget.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a coffin. They would shoot the line up, and then they would have these lines set up, and then they would it's like a little coffin. They would push mm-hmm. it all the way out, like on ropes and pulleys. So, good. So, we're all anticipating here. Everybody's waiting for the.
Where did the lifeguards start?
When did the lifeguards start? Yeah. Did it start with Baywatch? Or like, what happened? All of a sudden.
Was that a TV show before everything?
So, when did it start?
Atlantic City.
Yeah. See, 18th. That's what we thought.
So,
that's what Joe Cassino was telling me. Atlantic
unofficially,
City.
Unofficially.
So, go ahead.
Unofficially, 1855.
In Atlantic City.
So, yeah. So, this is from the Atlantic City Library, the Atlantic City Public Library. The Atlantic City Beach Patrol is the oldest operational lifeguard organization in the United States. In 1855, the city council appointed William Cazier.
Catchmore?
The city council appointed Dr. Michael Catchmore.
That's my great, 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 great uncle.
William Cazier to the position of, this is the coolest, and we should bring this back, the position of Constable of the Surf.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Constable of the Surf.
I like that.
So in 1855, a Constable of the Surf was appointed. There you go. That's your first lifeguard in the United States.
Wow.
In response to the growing popularity of Atlantic City's beaches, the ACBP expanded. By 1872, although it was an all-volunteer patrol, the ACBP had more than 20 lifeguards on its staff. The patrol was fully incorporated and joined the city payroll on June 12, 1892. Amongst the first lifeguards to be paid by the city were Jim Jeffries and Nick Headley. The first lifeguard. First lifeguards.
That's pretty interesting.
Oftentimes, yeah. Additionally worked on the police force. Victorian era customs dictated that proper individuals not bathe in the late afternoon sun. The lifeguards remained on duty from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m.
Wait, what was the Victorian era customs? They couldn't bathe at a certain time?
Yeah. You
could not bathe in the late afternoon sun. I wonder what. If they had any like dress codes.
Yes, they did. The women could not have to, they had to have their ankles covered, their legs completely covered. If you look at the pictures, I have pictures of this. We'll bring it next time. I have a book somewhere. And the men had to wear a tank top. They wore a shirt. That's why Atlantic City, you had the red shirts, and that's why Seaside Heights, which we belong to, when I first started in the 70s, we had the red tank top. And so
you
couldn't have your nipples exposed, especially if you were a man and a woman, but men too. What were we going to say?
I've heard a lot of the old timers complain about those red tank tops. And during my research, I ran into like a little comment about how when the Coast Guard was formed.
Look at the suits here.
We're listening to you.
They had them start wearing all white uniforms. Because people were complaining that they couldn't tell that they were Coast Guard, and they would get scared if their boat was going down, and these guys were standing on the beach shooting harpoons at their boats.
I see what you're saying.
So that's why they started making them wear uniforms.
Yeah. So Sean here has so people who are watching on a podcast, you could again look at our.
This is more clothes than people wear now.
Yeah. Look at our YouTube video or Facebook video. Right now we're showing pictures of the girls. I mean, they're fully clothed. I mean, it's kind of wild. And look at the men with the striped suits. They look like they're in jail. So you guys can't see it, but it's amazing. Yeah, but I didn't know that. That's very interesting what you're saying. So you're saying that they worked, the lifeguards, nobody was allowed in the water, so they worked from 11 to 1 p.m., and that was it.
Wow.
in the afternoon, it was considered inappropriate to go in the water. Yep.
11 a.m. until 1:30 p.m.
Wow.
What do you think? Do you think people were drinking at that point? Because this is 1850s.
Well, people were drinking all day back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, so they drink now. Like, I mean, you know.
Well, yeah.
I heard that it used to be, it was like a sport. It was like you go there, you go in the water, you get invigorated, then you get like rubbed down, and you like this whole thing, you know? Yeah. I mean, of course, you got to take a shower. I mean, you know, I think we forget, you guys are younger than me, and what I had when I grew up was different than what you guys have now. But back then, I mean, remember, there was electricity, like the Panama Canal, World War One was 1914. They just started with electricity, a little bit before that. I mean, there was no TV. There's no such thing. There's no phone. I mean, when did the phones come around, you know? I mean, you're starting...
Late 90s, right? Or when was the first cell phone?
No. I'm talking about phones, just phones.
Oh.
You know, I mean, you had them during, like, the definitely, 40s, yeah, but,
World
I mean...
World, end of World War One.
I'm not too sure how much you had. I don't think, so I don't even know, but back in these days, there was no radios. There was, you know, that's why you had flags. How do you communicate with a lifeguard? Mm-hmm. Like now we get on the radio, you know, Catch Marta headquarters. You know, there you had to like have a flag or a flare.
Send a smoke signal.
Well, you know, that's how with the planes and everything, they used to have bonfires. So, direct planes in. That's why they had lighthouses, you know, they had the light. So you got to go back and think about what you had back in those days and the mentality. Plus, I think a lot of people were still scared of the ocean, you know. They also, you still had a lot of activity with marine life. I mean, there was bluefish all the time. There was sharks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you have Shark River Inlet. I mean, a bunch of kids got killed there. There was people, I remember one in the 60s. Now, I wasn't around, but I remember the story. It was around here, I don't know if it was Island Beach State Park, whatever. 60s, some guy got killed by a shark, you know. So you do have, got to remember, it was a different time. You know, you look at the water and the water's bubbling with fish and birds coming down. You're like, I ain't going in there. So Atlantic City was the first beach patrol. So did they predate then? I guess you don't know about Hawaii.
They predate everybody in this country.
But Hawaii wasn't a state at that time.
What year was this, like 1850s?
So when did that? 1855 was the appointment of the constable of the service.
So the Intercontinental Railroad ended around 1863. So this beat California guards by like 10 years. How could we have had Hawaiian guards?
When did Hawaii start? Hawaii could have had lifeguards before they were a state,
right?
Could have been doing something.
You also got to take into consideration what's significant about 1863. Do you guys have any? What was the big event that was happening in 1863?
Civil War.
Ain't no bullshit. So, yeah, the Civil War. But my question is actually
one of the reasons why when they did this survey,
right,
in the late 1800s, that all of these life-saving stations were in a state of neglect.
Okay.
Because of all the resources getting pumped into the Civil State. War.
So let's look here. So now we have up here, Sean has the, Sean, so what do you look, we're looking at the,
quick Google search. We think 1912 is
in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oahu.
So when are we saying Atlantic City started?
1855.
So they're saying, and what is Hawaii saying?
They started paying lifeguards.
Yeah, they're saying 100 years of Oahu lifeguards.
In 1892.
In 2017.
So when did it start in Hawaii? I'm getting confused here. So
around 1910, 1920. 1912, this one says.
1912. And we're talking about in Atlantic City.
Over 50 years before that.
Wow. So then truly Atlantic City was the first.
Yeah.
So, wow. And then we started in Seaside Heights. We're a pedigree of Atlantic City because John Boyd, who was one of the original captains, was an athletic director down Atlantic City, and he took that model and brought it to Seaside Heights. Mm. Now, what year did we start our beach? Incorporated. When did our beach start? Because it's different. I think 39.
I think the first official date of the establishment of the Seaside Heights Beach Patrol, and this is something that gets debated all the time.
Yeah.
But the number that I have on a SHBP shirt that says established on it says 1934.
Okay. All right. So it was a while. And we got to remember these towns were just starting. So that's interesting. So
well, because, you know, this all started with you last week at asking about when people started swimming as a leisure activity.
Yeah.
So it's at least as far back as before 1855, because they decided that they need someone to watch after these people.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
I actually ended up in medieval Europe too.
Oh God. All right. So when did they, you say first in the United States. So when, what about, the, so in the whole world.
So then, the, so we know, we
what,
know.
Like what about like, you know, was there, was, so we you know Alexander the Great?
British, we know the British Humane Society, that's 1774. That's a few years before the Massachusetts Humane Society. Before that, we have the Dutch Humane Society. Similar lifeboat, life-saving kind of situation. And then before that, it gets kind of muddy. We have the Chinese.
Chinese, that blows my mind.
Yeah, when was China again?
Well, like I said earlier, they're like, historically, like they were the greatest seafaring civilization. But I did find some
China was definitely the... China was sailing. They think they were in the Atlantic by before anything. I don't know the dates. I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, no, but it's interesting.
We don't know anything about that far back.
Yeah, that's next time.
No. But it's interesting. It's interesting to
we can have Graham Hancock on the show.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting about the history. I mean, Europe. You know, you think about. The Mediterranean. I mean, think about the Roman Empire. I mean, there was water all over the place. I know they had baths, but did you find anything about
46 BC? Roman law establishes regulations. Okay,
stop now. Wait, 40. Slow down. 40 what BC? Now, what is BC? You remember what BC
means? Before the Common Era.
No, before Christ. Okay, stop. don't bullshit. It's before Christ. Okay, stop it. So BC. So how much before BC?
46 years before the Common Era.
Okay. And what happened?
Roman law establishes regulations requiring assistance to shipwrecked seamen and provides that owners of the vessels have 1 year and a day to file claims for recovery of wrecked ships and cargo. And before that, Alexandria had a lighthouse.
Well, that was supposedly one of the seven wonders of the world.
Yeah.
That was one. Yeah.
That was like the giant statue of the guy holding almost kind of like a Statue of Liberty type situation. Yeah.
You got to think that the Greeks and the Romans, because they were pretty sophisticated and they were pretty civilized, you know, you would think that they would have picked up, you know, had some kind of water sports or somebody.
Well, so if you have water. So what happened was people kind of like started shifting away from being in the sea due to like myths and religion and, you know, thinking that there's a sea serpent
or the Kraken.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. And in Rome.
Topic for next week, sea monsters.
Oh, please. Can we do that? I would love that so much. But in Rome, what kind of was going on was these people, they figured out, the aqueducts, right? So they had all this water available. And like you said, they had the Roman baths. That was their version of swimming. They weren't in open water. So nobody knew how to swim because they're wading around in waist-deep water the whole time.
So maybe the first lifeguard was like Rectus Amerius Lupus.
Well, listen to this. This is something crazy.
And he watched the pool.
Because, Kashmar, you said...
He watched the pool.
You said last week that you didn't think people were really swimming back then, and Sean and I disagreed with you.
Right. So you found somebody swimming...
Well, no, I think I found out that you were right. I want to share with you some of these drowning numbers. Okay? So here, I'm going to read you a quote from this article. It's titled How Europe Learned to Swim. It's from History Today. Mm-hmm. So like I said, swimming was becoming less and less common for a whole bunch of different reasons. In Rome, you had the baths in medieval England and stuff like that. You had all these superstitions regarding swimming.
Right.
So this article says, quote, the return of swimming, and this is a bit of a long one, but I make a point. The return to swimming in Western Europe was an excruciatingly slow process that began in the 16th century. Although we have no statistics for death by drowning in Tudor England, their number was probably greater than in the UK in the late 19th century, when between 2,200 and 64 and 3,659 people drowned annually. You might think that the only sensible countermeasure against drowning would be to teach people how to swim. But in the 1530s, German schools and universities decided that the best remedy would be a total ban on swimming, which in the university town of Ingolstadt on the Danube was punishable.
The Danube. It's the Danube. It's pronounced the Danube.
With the B in there, though?
That's how I think it's
Germans,
Okay. I think it's silent.
Ingolstadt. I think I nailed that one.
Yeah.
Ingolstadt on the Danube.
I thought you were German.
Ty, you're nailing actually this whole episode. I want to just point out.
Yeah?
Good research. Thoroughly research. So go ahead.
It was punishable by the whipping of the drowned offender before burial.
No, they would drag. Hey, that sounds like Seaside Heights. We rescue them and then we lock them up.
Hey, I'll bury you under the pier.
Now we know where we get that pedigree from. People go. I remember. We used to. They wouldn't listen to us. They drown. We bring them in, and then we have the costume, and we handcuff them. They get arrested.
Whipping oh, of the man. Drowned offender oh. after burial.
Oh man, talk about. Oh my God.
A similar.
Where did they do that in Germany?
This was Germany. A similar ban on swimming.
Oh man, those people. Oh man, go ahead.
A similar ban on swimming in the Cam came into force in Cambridge in 1571 with severe punishments for infringements, two public whippings, a fine of 10 shillings, and a day in the stocks for a first offense and expulsion for the second. So I want to dig into those drowning numbers a little bit, and then I want to talk about like these kind of punishments and
man was just not meant for
water
then.
This seems like some kind of like ridiculous savage kind of the point I'm making here is there were people during that time that I'm going to point out in a minute that were thinking a little more progressively about this, but I want to point out these drowning stats, right? So we said in the late 19th century, right, in England, between 2,264 and 3,659 people drowned annually, okay? During that time, I did a little quick maths on this. During that time, there were 16.8 million people living in England, okay? So we'll take an average between those two numbers of around 3,000 drownings in a population of 16.8 million is a number of 0.01% or 1 in 10,000 people, okay? In modern-day USA, with a population of 330 million, we have an average annual number of drowning victims of 3,500 people. Mm. So that's only 500 people more, or 1 in 100,000. Right, right. So, Catchmar, to prove you right from last week, nobody knew how to swim back then.
Right.
And
you win.
You were right.
I did a week of research to prove you right.
Right. Well, you got to understand something. A couple of things. First of all, it's how close you are to water. I mean, if you live in Kansas City, I mean, there's lakes and everything. I guess you could drown. But so if you're surrounded by water, there's more chance you're drowning. So the statistics could be, a little bit. But here's the thing. People who live in day to day, I don't think from a sociology standpoint, you didn't have the leisure. People didn't have the leisure we have now. Basically, you got up, you worked your ass off, and it was subsistence, right? And and the average lifespan, I think, back in those days, way back then, it was like 30 years old.
Time to go for a jog and have a spa.
No. You were just surviving, and so that's it. But I think that's what's interesting about all of this is that. Oh, by the way, the first, you talk about, but I find that we probably don't have the statistics or the written, what's the word I want to use, written history, but I bet you any amount of money, like I said, the Greeks and the Romans, there's a lot of water around here.
And what we're talking about today is like a very surface kind of brush over all of this. I plan on going a lot deeper into all, because there's a bunch of stuff in here that really, really, really interested me a lot that I just did not have the time to dig into properly.
Do you think the depiction of like all the sea monsters and stuff was just a way to get people to not go in?
A way to keep
them.
I think people saw things. Yeah. People see things. Yeah.
So what do you think they saw? Like a
whales,
colossal squid?
I don't think it was that intentional. I think people were just superstitious back there. They didn't have the type of science to explain these things. So everything was at the hand of some type of God.
And with all these deaths, they were just naturally afraid of the water. It killed so many people.
Yeah, if you don't learn how to swim, if you don't have a training regime, but
people back then had a tendency to relinquish control to a higher power.
Right. Well, but what gets me, what I wanted to know,
and as they do now.
But what's really interesting is that it started in the United States and probably Western civilization is when we start to get industrialized. It sounds to me like the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, definitely kicked this off.
Right, kicked it off. We had more money. We had more time, more leisure time, and we started to go to the beach. And a lot of it too was because of necessity. You know, you had to have commerce and things moving along. But the specific thing about lifeguarding and people on the beach started to turn of the century.
More
and,
leisure, you had more
well,
time.
Well,
to
you got to think and, like right, more ships coming to the coast, shipping more goods, mm-hmm. more shipwrecks,
mm-hmm. yeah, more trade, necessity. More money. Mm-hmm. People were making yeah. more during the Industrial Revolution.
Now, yeah,
but it's crazy that there's this direct lineage between us and basically these fishermen and, you know, anglers
sure.
and
sure.
boat captains sure. that, you know, were just brought into this service, right? This service of keeping an eye on the waves and putting their own lives at risk
right,
to go
right,
out there
right.
just because they understood the surf, right? Just because right. they have that basic ability that we try so desperately to get every lifeguard to do, and that's read the water.
Right. Yeah, some would call all of us watermen, if you will.
Some might right. call, yeah, yeah,
watermen.
Right, right, yeah, watermen. Right, watermen. I love that term so much.
Right. So you know, you got the thing where people are out there fishing and you know, plying their trade, making a living, and they, because of the you know, the storms and the bad weather and the boats sinking and fog and crashes and war. You know, you need to have these people to save lives, and that developed. And then, of course, when we have leisure time, people started going to the beach, and the same thing happened. What I think is interesting is that there's also that's one parallel. That's one thing we talk about. But the other thing you have to bring in, and I want to mention it to our colleagues and other people. There's another thing that's happening, and this was probably where it started in Hawaii. Was these people were actually, you know, in an early time. I don't want to say playing in the water, but they had these trimarans. They were competing.
They were,
you know, rowing.
I feel like they were definitely playing in the water because
right, and then they started surfing.
And this is yeah. and, well, this is the argument I was making about, you know, natives in this area is that their lives were so tied to the water.
Right, right. So they're
out there all day anyway. And right. like Sean said, you know, you're right. rowing in. Well, you're not trying to catch a wave, but at some point you're going to catch a wave and realize that one, it's quicker,
it's
and two, most importantly,
it's
fun.
Right. So you have the lifeguards, and then you have another whole thing that grew up, and that's surfing. And we could talk about that, you know, anytime. But surfing
is the endless summer, right?
The endless summer. But surfers, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of surfers. They're in the water. They know the water. They make thousands and thousands of rescues. You know, the surfers in our area, when we leave the beach at night and or, you know, when we're not around, they make a lot. So that's another thing that you could discuss, the history of surfing and how that kind of, you know, we got to get somebody in
yeah,
here.
The Polynesians.
I'm obsessing over this, like, direct lineage, but I'm picturing, like, just this salty, like, dog lighthouse keeper, and then there's just a direct line to, like, the 16-year-old green rookie sitting mm-hmm. next to me on my lifeguard stand.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's but, never
but,
swam
but, you know,
around,
but somewhere along the line, the you know, there's another branch that cuts off where you have surfers.
Yes.
And that's another whole entity because it's huge. I mean, there's if you look at the literature.
And that's something that's kind of like developed like side by side with
lifeguards. Yeah, I mean.
Because as weird as it is, you don't see
no,
those two worlds, like
no, then and I'll give you another world, which is also was probably in the 16th and 17th centuries. I definitely know the 17th century was racing and sailing.
Oh yeah,
and that is another, you know, water, because you know you could look at Moby Dick. You know, they were out there with the boats and, you know, the ocean and sailing. But then you have that whole thing where there was big time. It's today. I mean, you still have thousands and thousands. I sail. I mean, sailing is a huge, huge passion. So another thing that broke off, because people, you know, yeah, I'm sorry, what were you going to say,
Something
Sean?
That draws all these people in is the ocean, when it's rough, it's hills of rolling water, and it just looks incredible. If you're out there on a board or a boat, like it
speaks to you.
It looks, you just don't, you know, you don't belong in this environment, and you are. It's incredible. Right.
I just think what I'm trying to make the point is that, you know, us as lifeguards, we don't have the monopoly on the ocean.
And,
you know, you have surfers that were probably at the same time or coming off of. That's another thing we should research. Like, so where did the break off come from surfing? I think it like Hawaii.
Yeah.
Probably surfing started in Hawaii. I don't know if anybody was surfing.
It was definitely like a Hawaii Cali thing.
Right. Well, Cali.
I think Hawaii.
So when you talk about surfing now, you know, we're establishing the pedigree of lifeguarding maybe starting in New Jersey because of the life saving, but I bet it's pretty damn close with
officially,
Hawaii.
Officially in this country, lifeguarding started in New Jersey.
Well, okay. It sounded because of the Industrial Revolution, just the amount of money going into the tri-state area caused leisure to happen. And
well, of course, the shipping too, going back and forth from New
commerce.
York. But my thing is that you also have sailing and surfing.
Okay,
and
here you go.
So where'd that... And,
well, the earliest evidence... The
coast, people were sailing on South Carolina, but I think specifically the amount of money that was just coming in this area brought in enough free time for people to start going to the beach.
That's why all of this started here.
Yeah,
It was 100%. New York, Philadelphia, those two, you know, what is it? You have the Delaware Water Gap, and then what's down south? Cape May?
Yeah. No, the Delaware Water Gap is up in North Jersey.
How do you get into New York City? What do you
Hudson River? Okay, you had Hudson.
You had two major ports.
Right,
biggest ports in the country. And Philly, you could
take a boat all the way up to Philly. Yeah, and then of course you had Chicago and Mississippi, but that's another waterway.
The odds of those guys surviving a shipwreck
were astronomically
low. I mean, you would have, because these barrier islands weren't really that inhabited, so you'd have a shipwreck in the middle of winter, and even if you made it to shore, you are
freezing cold,
but suffering, fighting elements. Right. You know what you guys, I'm sure you've read this, The Open Boat?
No.
Who wrote that, The Open Boat? It's an amazing short story. Stephen Crane. I'm an English major. Why would I not know that? The Open Boat by Stephen Crane. It's an amazing short story that everyone should read, especially that loves the ocean.
But people should understand, you know, we talk about this topic today is because we wanted to see what happened with the lifeguarding. But there's so many other areas that were probably pretty close to the start. And like I said, surfing. I think we should probably a good chance to start in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And then maybe
I actually
California.
Have that pulled up right here. The earliest evidence of surfing history. And this is just
random.
Collections of Waikiki.com. The earliest evidence of surfing history can be traced back to the 12th century Polynesia, so the 1300s.
There you go. And that's surfing. Is that surfing cave, boards? Or
cave paintings have been found, which clearly illustrate ancient versions of surfing, along with many other aspects of their culture.
Wow.
They brought surfing to Hawaii, and it became popular from there.
Brought it from where though?
From Polynesia to Hawaii.
Okay. So there's that connection, and then of course they were lifeguarding, and they brought that to Cali, and then Cali, some guys from California, like that guy Joe Pecoraro, went to Chicago.
Australia too, I think, got it around the same time as Cali.
Right. Also, so they may have got it from Hawaii or
Hawaii,
you know,
I think was the origin, or it sounds like Polynesia.
PlanetSurfCamps.co.uk also is quoted.
And then one other thing.
Saying it's from Polynesia.
So one other thing,
saying
guys.
Surfing is from Polynesia. Crediting. That's the word I was looking for.
Look at this. When did competitive sailing start? Like, like what year in the United States? Can you look that up real quick? When did sailing start? Like 16th, 17th century? Because we had commerce. Sailing was.
Well,
but when did they start doing it leisurely? Like competitive. So that would be, you know, when did competitive sailing start?
I can tell you when competitive lifeguard competitions.
No. I want sailing. No, sailing. Because
don't,
that's another.
Don't
that's
do it.
That's a huge, huge thing. Sailing.
I want to get into that a little bit though, because that is. Let's see. Competition U.S. sailing. No.
Sailing.
This is a tough one because now you're dealing with a million different.
No, yeah. Imagine how long ago people were
sailing
boats.
Organizations.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, they were in the water. They were. I mean, they had. What I'm saying
is
that
was probably the Polynesians too.
But I'm asking, you know, because you know, you talk about people who are in the water. I mean, if you're sailing, one of the sailing boats go down. Somebody had to be rescued. I mean, you know, they had to know the water. They had to know the storm. So it's another group of people
in an endeavor
that's really related to what we're talking about.
I'm looking at athleticscholarships.net. Or what are you looking at, Kay?
Infoplease.com.
Oh, here.
It's saying sports sailing or yachting originated in the 17th century in Holland.
There you go.
Holland.
So 1720 or 1666. Yeah, look at that. So we have it up on our YouTube.
The first time
sailing, if you guys want to look at it,
was noticed as a true sport was in 1896 when it became a part of the Olympics.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but it
and
was
has been part of the Olympics since. Both men and women participate. Oh.
Right. So don't, you know, so, you know, we're part of a big family. You know, you have lifeguarding, you have sailing, you have surfing. And a lot of these things are not, like surfing and sailing wasn't just started in, you know, 1990. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 16th, 17th centuries, people were sailing competitively, surfing the Polynesian. So there's a long pedigree of people in water. But the, but we when we hose down or hose down, when we key down on, you know, the lifeguards, you know, in Seaside Heights, Atlantic City, that's more the industrial age when there's a lot of money. And you know, we talk about, you know, saving people. Because we could have Coast Guard here. They do, I mean, they save, you know, there's the PJs, which is another, it's a branch of the Air Force. And they're specifically made to or established to save pilots, downed pilots. Mm-hmm. And if you read The Perfect Storm, the book, the one PJ who got lost, I think his name was Smith. And they're different than Coast Guards. PJs, Coast Guard goes from interior United States to 200 miles out. And, of course, they do, you know, in the war, they'll go to different countries and everything. But they're basically 200 miles out. And then you have what's called the PJs, which is another saving entity. And they're specifically made to save pilots. They'll help other people, but they go 200 miles and further out.
This is slightly off track, but how good is the movie Dunkirk? Did you see that, Cashmore?
Yeah. Why? Yes, because it's, of course, the water.
Well, the guy's flying over and crashes. I don't want to, you know, spoil
yeah,
too
yeah,
much.
Yeah.
But so
well, it's
good.
Like it's history, right? So what are you really spoiling?
No, just the actual story of the movie. The guy, there's a fighter pilot.
Well, it's a beach scene. I mean, if you could tie it into what we're talking about, I mean, it is on the beach.
Yeah, so, spoiler alert.
So what happened was,
the guy crashes on the beach at the end.
The British were banged. They were pushed back to the water, to Dunkirk.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were going to lose. I mean, it was
They couldn't get back.
Didn't they pull off like the greatest escape?
Well, no, civilians saved the people, or the soldiers, and they brought them back to Britain.
Yeah,
A little bit of lifeguarding right there.
Maybe. I read the book, and I don't know how much. I mean, the military, the Navy did a great job, but they had a lot of civilians that helped, and I think the civilians, what they did is, I don't know how many people they really saved, but
couldn't attack the civilians without America getting involved was the big political aspect.
I love history.
But what I think was also is that it was a rallying cry, not propaganda. That's not the word I want to use.
But it was just, it was like a turning point, right?
It gave people hope, right. And they saved a lot. That turned the tide because all of those soldiers were saved to fight another day. They were ready to fight.
It's crazy. Every great event in history, you look back and there's some type of waterman pulling the strings.
70% of the planet's covered in the ocean.
Right. Well, so no, that was a big thing. But I think that was a patriotic thing, and it's amazing. Yeah, but the one guy, he lands on the beach and he gets, you know, he just ran out of fuel.
Best war movie since Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, there's a lot, but anyway, it is a beach scene. It is water, and you're right. There's a lot of, I mean, you could go crazy with the battles. I mean, there's been, I don't know, we get into a whole thing. That's another day. It's almost done with the show. You could get into big Navy battles, but I just wanted to stay focused on the lifeguard stuff, and that, we work for the Seaside Beach Patrol, which is an old beach patrol that came from and mimicked Atlantic City.
First branch off of the first beach patrol in the United
States. Right, right, right. And now, you know,
that's called tradition.
Tradition. And there's a lot of lifeguards. In fact, we're going tonight to the lifeguarding. It's the Chiefs Association in Avon by the Sea, which is north of us today. And we have a meeting to talk about, you know, CPR and basically lifeguard stuff, you know. So we just don't do it, in just 3-4 months in the summer. We do it all year round. So we take it really serious. And I think that a lot of kids who work on the beach patrol, they work maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and they actually legit save somebody's life. And you know, they go on to become an accountant or whatever. And, you know, great careers, but never had the opportunity to save anybody's life again.
It builds great people. It really does.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also prepares them for the unlikely event that they do have to save someone's
life. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I work with you guys, and, you know, I come down and I kid around. But, you know, there's days where, you know, we got thousands, you know, hundreds of people in the water, maybe thousands. And it's a lot of responsibility. And, you know, you could definitely get overwhelmed. And like for me, when I'm up there and I'm the only guy up there, the officer, you know, and I got a concert going on. I got wine tasting, you know, girls doing pole dancing around the poles. I got, you know, you guys, you know, wearing your hats backwards, you know, not listening to me. And, you know, you got, you know, people. I mean, one day I remember within a half hour, you know, 4 or 5 lost kids. Two of the kids that the parents were panicking, thought they drowned in the water. You know, I get one of you guys, remember the one guy calls up, one of the lifeguards, there's 3 people unconscious on the beach, you know. It just goes on and on and on. So, you know, we deal with a very fluid, dynamic, and potentially dangerous environment. And you got to be a certain kind of individual. And if you make it and stay there, it shapes you into an individual that could handle almost anything, you know. So
listening to you say this, I'm thinking about, like, How far, right, we've come from the original USLSS and the Revenue Marine Service and the Revenue Cutter Service, you know, these forerunners to the Coast Guard and the forerunners to Atlantic City, and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What the major differences are. And I think one of the major differences is the preventative aspect of what we do now. I think that it's just become like, just keep people out of these situations where these original guys were just walking around the beach, seeing shipwrecks and just doing whatever they could to scramble to get it together and save them.
Yeah. And as we were talking about earlier this episode, they lost a lot of people doing that, which is why we are so on track to try and not have to save people hundreds of yards out.
Yeah. And everything in this game is so trial and error. Like there's probably going to be a bunch of stuff we do now that we're going to look back on 10, 15 years from now and be like, wow, that was inefficient.
I don't know.
Swimming out of rope cam, for example. There's no way that we're not going to have some Seabob type contraption that's going to get it out there in 2 seconds.
Maybe. But I could tell you there's certain absolutes that are not going to change. I mean, unless we evolve into some other kind of creature, you know, like with fins. And you're going to,
if we can build a creature with fins that can
You think about it. You got about 100 years of lifeguarding, right? And because really, it's about 100 years. I mean, if you look at our beach, you know, some of the beaches, you know, started in the 20s. Every beach has done every kind of different lifeguarding, like saving, you know, and boats and cans. And now you got drones, which are interesting because you could have a drone right now and go over and see somebody drowning and drop a buoy. You know, you got, like you said, the jet skis, they're getting better and better, and we're getting better at using them. You got Seabobs, which could help you facilitate swimming. So there's a lot of different things. Also, there's a lot of education and preventative. You know, we know now we have satellites. We know the weather. We could predict the oceans. So there's a lot of things. But still, you know, we have the human frailty. You know, you sit there and, you know, is every lifeguard can see everything that's happening. You know, there's still mistakes being made. People go in the water intoxicated, you know, high. Yeah. They have a heart attack. I mean, you know, you got a 52-year-old guy who's swimming, you know, out, and it's not a really bad day, and he has a heart attack, and he's going down. I mean, you know, you got seconds, and maybe even if you do get him, he may die from the heart attack or a seizure. So, you know, it's still that lifeguard swimming out there with the freestyle, humping it out and getting that person and then get him in. So, and I don't know, you know, how I mean, like Bondi Beach, they use boards. I don't watch that, you know. So we swim with a rope can and loose can. Other beaches do different things. So, but I think that what we wanted to accomplish today, and I think we should end this program, is that there is a long history of lifeguarding and saving people's lives. The people from back then, they were a lot tougher, I think. But we're pretty tough. But But, you know, they had to rise to the occasion. Maybe they didn't know any better, but they were definitely tough, and they were the pioneers. And they were working with stuff that they were inventing stuff. And, you know, now we have the ability to take what they learned, they taught us and showed us. And I think going forward, like I agree with you, we're going to get better and better. We're going to get new equipment. We're going to have better understanding and education. I think that if they should be teaching swimming in school, they should be teaching, you know, rip currents and stuff like that. And you see it now. When I go on my webpage, my app on my phone for weather, there's a whole thing about rip currents now. So I think that a lot of people know that. So, hopefully that's going to help. But it's been interesting. I didn't know about Hamilton and the revenue. I didn't know about China. I wouldn't even think about that, you know. So I learned a lot today. It was really informative to me. And so anyway, if we could end this. Yeah. How about we do this? Sean, how about you put up there? So this is our email address. It's for the people at the podcast. It's Dr. Michael Kachmar. So that's drkachmar at iCloud. That's iCloud.com. Send us an email. Send us your email on an email. We will contact you. We could get you on the show. We could send you a link. You could come on. We're on Facebook Live. We're on YouTube Live. Today we'll take maybe one or two of these clips here. You'll see some clips that we have. And follow us. Comment. What's the other...
We have an Instagram at lg.association.
So say that. So can you, for the podcast?
lg.association on Instagram, lg.association.
Right. So, and people who are listening to this podcast, if you listen to this tonight or tomorrow or whenever, you could go back and see our live show and watch the live show if you want, or parts of it. There's a lot of information there that we posted with regard to the information that we talked about today, lifeguarding. So Sean, I got the wrong Sean. So what do you want to say? Anything? Say goodbye to everybody. We're going to get some music here soon.
No, I'm good. Stay out. So, stay alive.
Hang loose, guys.
Are we doing?
Oh, one more thing I wanted to point out that I found that was really cool.
What do you got?
Another really cool name, Everard Digby wrote De Arte Natande. Who knows what that means?
The art of swimming.
Well done, Sean.
Thank you.
The art of swimming.
That took Spanish.
The very first illustrated book in the English language is wow. about swimming.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Everard Digby. Brilliant name.
I don't know where you get. All right. Well, listen, Sean, thank you for working the computer today. I'm Dr. Michael Kachmar. This is off-duty lifeguarding with Dr. Michael Kachmar.
The show with 1,000 names. Show,
lifeguards off-duty. Lifeguards off-duty with Dr. Kachmar. So stay out, stay alive, stay out, stay
I
alive.
I love this new music.
And we're going to listen to some of our music here. Have a good time.
Let us know if you like the music.
Yeah. We'll listen to a little music and rock a little bit. All right.